You know, they're bringing that show back. Can you believe it?
Are we venturing out into the real world, Marvin?
Yeah, I was watching Puck the other day. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B. Ladies and gentlemen, today is Wednesday, July 10th of 2019, and I have got a very special guest with me. You will remember him from about a year ago, and I think it was time to bring him back and revisit some things, and I think it's going to be great. I did not put him in the green room right now, so he's actually on the air with me listening as I go through our housekeeping stuff. So if you hear somebody giggling or interjecting, that would be him. I'll introduce him in just a moment. But first, I want to make sure that I get some of this stuff out of the way, because once we get talking, I'll probably forget. So I want to say that tonight's show is brought to you by Freedom Voice, the voice of small business. And I'm not going to read the entire ad tonight, but I am going to obviously tell you that, you know, most of you know my story where I was, you know, against selling VoIP years ago. I wanted to stay in my lane. And after a couple of years of hearing about VoIP and finally running into some people at the conferences, Unconvention ITO, our good friend Jason Miller, and my partner Paul Mendiola, they finally got me on board. And I have now three systems deployed, over 50 phones. I'm happy that I made that decision. And of course, you know, I'm going to say, if I can do it, you can do it. And with Freedom Voice backing you up, it's easy to support and manage. You call them, they help you, pretty much as simple as it gets. And of course, the monthly recurring revenue works out just great. So folks, if you want to partner up with somebody who is going to help you, and of course, I think it was last show where I mentioned some of the great things they did for me without even asking, in helping me to look like a hero for my customer, not charging them until the phones are in use. Folks, you can't beat that. So instead of giving you the phone number, I'm going to give you a website to go to. Basically, go to freedomvoice.com/partners, and that will get you all the information that you need to go. Need to know. And then, of course, you can sign up there at the bottom of the page there. So don't need to call. Just head to freedomvoice.com/partners and sign up with a great voice over IP provider. So that will be that. The other housekeeping things, of course, our conference that is coming up this September. And the reason I said November, just so you think I'm not going nuts, is I will be having to attend another event in November. My niece is getting married. So I was just talking to our guest about that earlier, so that's stuck in my head. But in September, I'll be headed to Grand Rapids, Michigan to attend the TechCon Unplugged. You've heard us talk about that. If you've gone to the webpage, you'll see we've added some great things to the schedule. We have a featured speaker, Tim Conkle, CEO of The 20, somebody who has really helped a lot of MSPs grow and scale their business. That's going to be a great time there. The schedule is filling out. Take a look at that. The cost, folks, $199. I have no idea how many tickets are left, but you should go to the site now while they're still there. $199 is a bargain to get all the great content you're going to get. Food is included. A night at Dave & Buster's is included. And of course, some other great stuff is going to be included. I hear that there's going to be some nice giveaways from the vendors. You won't want to miss out on any of that. So techconunplugged.com for a great conference in September. And the link in the show note to help Eric Ardini is still there, folks. If you can give to the family of Eric Ardini, who lost his battle with cancer, please do so. Great Podnuts friend, for many years. One of the guys who helped us basically get to this point. He pioneered podcasting in the Podnuts community for a lot of us. So that is that. Okay, housekeeping is done. I think as I ruffle through papers here, yes, we are done. So now I want to bring back a guest that you all loved and enjoyed. The episode that he was on last year was 162. I am talking about attorney Bradley Gross, and I had him on last year. We talked about managed service agreements, why you should have them. Bradley Gross is an attorney here in South Florida. He is the attorney that I use for my service agreement. His firm is a complete business technology firm. Not only do they do agreements, they handle things like intellectual property. They handle internet fraud, online advertising. Folks, if it has to do with technology and it has to do with the internet, digital stuff, Bradley Gross is somebody you want to talk to. Bradley, did I introduce you pretty well there?
Yeah, I think you did a very nice job. Thank you.
Okay. And folks, it isn't that he's just started this. I mean, you've been involved in a lot of this stuff going back many, many years. I think I found a case going back to 1999 where you were talking about, what was it, the online auction of domain names?
Sure. I went back to 99 on that. And of course, as a prosecutor, both in New York and Florida, I was the lead prosecutor who founded the Internet and Computer Crimes Division of the state attorney's office down here in Miami. And it was interesting. We were doing things back then when it wasn't fashionable to do them. But now these types of things are all the rage.
They are. Now, it's funny. I'm going off topic here. So I had a law firm where one of the attorneys came to me one day asking me if I wanted to buy some names. So he had gone out and scooped up all these names and was having trouble selling them, but wanted to resell them to me, thinking I, as a tech guy, would be able to resell these names. And I said, no, I don't have time for that. So is the internet name auction still that huge?
No, you know, look, I think that in its heyday, it made a lot of people a lot of money. I think now certain targeted names are still valuable and you could still make money on it. But the days of buying large swaths of names and then peddling them, thinking that they're going to be, just swooped up by willing buyers, I think those days are long behind us.
Okay. All right, good. So I didn't get suckered.
No. Right. I think you made the right decision.
Beautiful. So let's kind of go back and review. So last year I had you on, we talked about master service agreements, and pretty much there was an introduction. A lot of people, you know, they know about terms and conditions and they know they should probably have something written, signed, but for smaller companies or MSPs that had not been around for a while, weren't ready to jump on the MSA bandwagon, I guess. And so you have been around, ASCII, you've been out doing a whole bunch of stuff. And so I know that, you know, these agreements now are almost commonplace. Everybody talks about them in some of the forums that I see on Facebook. So first thing I want to ask is, just to prove to everybody that I don't make money off of my guests, you and I have not talked about the response from last year's show. So I should probably ask you, how did that go?
So you are correct. We have not talked about it. And your response, the response was really good. A lot of people took to heart the dire warnings, and they really are dire warnings that I was giving through your show about the need for these agreements and statements of work and so forth. They took advantage of it. They took advantage of the discount that that we give your listeners, which we could talk about at the end.
Okay.
And really, it's worked out well for my firm, obviously, but it's really worked out really well for the clients that have had us draft these forms and have relied on them for the past year.
Okay. So yes, we'll talk about those at the end. And one of the things I guess we should do is, for people who maybe did not hear that show or have not been, you know, around long enough to understand what an MSA is, a master service agreement, Let's just do a quick recap and explain to people what is an MSA and why do you need it?
Sure. So an MSA is a master service agreement. Okay. And the idea behind the master agreement is that it becomes your constitution. It is your governing document and it governs everything that your company is going to provide. It governs every service, every product it sells. It is service and product agnostic. So I don't really care what service or product you're selling or reselling or leasing or whatever transaction you want to enter into. If you are doing it and it's being done by your company, it is governed by your master agreement. And that master agreement, as we discussed last time, needs to cover two overall areas. You have to cover the legal end of things, and then you have to cover the relationship end, the managed expectation end of things. Both are equally as important, though the managed expectation end of things pops up far more often than does the legal end of things.
So, yes, expectations. And I'm going to try to explain a story to you and see if this will help understand or help people understand why you'd need one. So I had a customer that was a customer of a customer, I guess is the best way to describe it. So I used to do body shops back in the day, but I actually got paid by a paint company. And it was one of those weird little deals where, you know, I would go out, put all the stuff in, and I would get paid by the paint company and they would get reimbursed. So I actually never got paid by the body shops. So that kind of went away around 2008, 2009, about the same time the housing market dropped. So a lot of stuff happened. So some body shops stayed with me individually. And this is one of them where I maybe do something for them once a year. You know, hey, my system's a little slow. Can you clean it up? Hey, I think I got some malware. Can you clean it up?
You mean you did it directly?
Yes.
Okay.
And so in the shop paid me. So now granted, back in the day, I didn't do any sort of agreements. Everything was a handshake. And even though I am now making all of my normal customers, meaning the ones I do my monthly agreements with, they are signing master service agreements. But some of them, like this, are customers that I, you know, if I don't hear from them again, I haven't forced them to sign something. So on Monday, I get a call and he's been hit with something that encrypted all his files. We've not done anything with them in terms of putting protection on their systems, giving them backup or anything like that. And he actually asked, well, we thought you were taking care of that. And I had to explain it to him.
He thought you were taking care of it from way back when.
And I said, no, we've never taken care of that. I've talked to you about taking care of that, but you never wanted to spend the money to take care of that. And so nothing was ever done. Now, he understood that. He's, you know, I've been with him a long time. And he said, okay, yeah, I get it. And, you know, case was closed. He went out and I think he paid $75 for the ransom, got some of his stuff back. And he wants me to get him a new computer and we're going to do something going forward. But that sounds to me like a perfect situation where had it not been a type of relationship that I had with that person, there was no agreement in place. And the argument would have been on his behalf that I thought you were taking care of it. So without an agreement, what would have happened if that had actually gone to court or something?
Well, so, you know, if you didn't promise him anything and there was no reasonable expectation, not looking at it from his point of view, but a reasonable person's perspective, then in the end, you probably would have no liability. However, to get to the point where somebody said you had no liability, you would have to go consult with an attorney. You'd have to pay a consult fee. You'd have to maybe pay an attorney to defend yourself from litigation. Yes, you'd win the litigation, right? You'd win the war eventually, but to get to that point, you would have spent thousands and thousands of dollars, all because expectations weren't properly managed.
Right.
I understand why they weren't properly managed. 10, 12 years ago, it wasn't fashionable in the service provider industry to memorialize and to write everything down. Now, if you don't do it in this litigious environment, you are simply asking for problems. Truth be told, the most vicious combative fights that we get involved in occur when each party thinks that he or she is correct, right? So if the network owner really thought that you were taking care of it, I mean, he really thought that, okay? And of course, you're sitting there thinking, I haven't even spoken to you in 5 years. Why would I ever be taking care of that? So you really thought that you didn't need to take care of it. That's the kind of vicious combative fight that escalates very quickly and gets very expensive, where an agreement, a statement of work outlining what you will do, what you will not do, would put that all to bed very, very quickly.
Of course, the first thing I thought of is, and I actually use this when I talk to people about the agreements, your story last year was all about getting your tire fixed and going into the store. And even though it was getting fixed, all they were doing was putting a plug into it, you still signed the pages of agreement that you would have had to sign if you were getting a major auto overhaul.
That's simply right. For
the fact of and I don't know if we said the company's name, but you know, the tire center, basically, right. If you had driven off the lot and something happened, they're responsible.
I would have blamed them, certainly, right? And they would have the headache of now having a angry attorney who's local and knows how to go on Yelp, right? And write reviews and so forth, when maybe they did nothing wrong, or maybe they shouldn't be liable.
Right.
So that was the spark that led to the MSASOW paradigm that I now preach.
Yeah. So now I've figured out I've got to come up with something that even if it's a customer that I see once a year, once every 5 years, one time, they're going to have to sign something.
Right. And, you know, while I would not suggest to anyone that you go in without the safety net of a master service agreement and a well-worded statement of work, at the very least, and I do mean at the very least, you need to have a statement of work that describes what you're going to do, what you're not going to do, what the client can reasonably expect, and what the client should not expect. And that would fall outside of that SOW, that statement of work. You know, even if you don't have a contract in place, again, not suggesting you walk that tightrope without the net below you. That would be crazy.
Right.
But, you know, in a worst case scenario, have something there that outlines expectations, because I promise you, when things go badly, and they will, it happens to everybody, your expectations will not match theirs.
Right.
You will not be aligned.
Okay. So that at least explains master service agreement. We also talked a little bit about statements of work, which is a separate document. And I can attest to the value of having a statement of work for things that are not covered in your agreement. I just recently had a scenario where, oddly enough, a law firm that we take care of their regular maintenance, and we actually specified that, and they signed the agreement, and all we're taking care of is their web protection, their antivirus, their updates, and some basic end user support. And we put on there that, you know, nothing else is covered. And they recently asked, so some of the law firms that are dealing with things like insurance defense, or they're dealing with leases, commercial leases and stuff, they're now being asked to have security audits or security assessments done, where they've got to prove that the data of the insurance company or the bank is protected. You know, they've got to prove that it's encrypted at rest and protected in transit, and every user has a unique password and all these things. And so now they're asking for us to not only say yes, and we have policies, and we have to provide proof that there are policies and documentation. So I actually wrote out a separate statement of work for, actually at this point, for just doing the assessment. We have not gotten to the point of, you know, if the bank comes back and says, okay, you've got to, you know, do these every year, then I have to create a different either statement or agreement of how we're going to do that going forward. So I created a statement of work just for doing the assessment. And the attorney at first, he's like, are you kidding me? And I said, well, yeah, this is not part of what we normally do, so you need to pay this. And short answer is they signed in, you know, paid me and we're good to go. But having those statements of work and at least from my perspective, putting the foot down that we're not going to do anything unless you sign something.
Yeah. And the idea is that statements of work not only manage expectations, but one other thing that they do that is often overlooked until it bites you. And then you think, oh, thank God I had a statement of work. And that is the issue or the occurrence of scope creep. Right. So, and that happens in every service industry, it happens in my industry. It happens in every industry that, you know, you say you're going to provide service A and clients will automatically think that that includes B and C and maybe a little bit of D. And the issue that we often see with providers, with MSPs, is that in their zeal to get the job done or keep the client satisfied, they will have a statement of work that says they're going to perform A. And then they'll do a little bit of B when the client asks. And at that point, it becomes a slippery slope. So, yeah, I suggest that at the outset, you get a statement of work that not only defines what you're going to do, but what you're not going to do. And then, just like you said, Marvin, stick to it. Stick to it. And don't assume that what you're going to do for free that falls outside of the statement of work is going to foster some goodwill. I mean, it might, but the amount of scope creep that it will lead to outweighs the goodwill. Okay. You're going to lose money. You're going to lose time. Get a statement of work in place. Talk about what you're going to do. Make clear what you're not going to do. Set expectations. And if other things are needed beyond that scope, then you issue another statement of work. And if they're not willing to sign that statement of work and pay for your service, then in truth, they probably don't value your service anyway, and it's not a client you want. And that goes the same for my business, for your business, for any service provider. If they're not willing to pay for your time and your expertise, then why would you want to have that person as a client? Answer, you wouldn't. So statements of work not only set expectations, but they avoid scope creep, and that saves you time and money.
All right. So let's take a shift because I wanted to also bring you on to not just talk about these agreements, but talk about some of the things that are happening out in the real world that are affecting us.
In the real world.
You know, they're bringing that show back. You believe that?
Are we venturing out into the real world, Marvin?
Yeah, I was watching Puck the other day.
Oh God. Can I speed dial my therapist onto this call now, Marvin? Is that possible?
Oh, did that bring back some poor memories for you?
Exactly.
Oh my. So I of course, you know, I'm involved a little bit with HIPAA and I actually consult with a gentleman that does another podcast for MSPs about HIPAA. And, you know, a while back we talked about how things are changing for business associates, which for the most part is us, you know, MSPs that provide work for, you know, covered entities, so whether they're doctor's offices, dentists, skin people or whatever. And so there was a breach recently at Quest Diagnostics, which basically 12 million patients were estimated to be affected by a breach. And it turns out that a third party is going to be held responsible for this. And it prompted the OCR, the Office for Civil Rights, to basically put out a new updated definition that basically spells out direct liability of business associates. So I wanted to ask your opinion on a couple of these things because it's obviously sure going to affect how we do business. But first, some of the things that it talks about, well, first it gives 10 things. I'm not going to go through all 10, but it basically is business associates are directly liable for HIPAA violations as follows. And I was like, okay, the fact that they said directly should scare us, I think. But then they talk about things of failure to provide records and compliance reports, failure to comply with the requirements of the rule, failure to provide breach notification. So I know that a lot of times in the past, business associates would always just pawn off that responsibility to the covered entity.
Right.
But now it looks like that's going to come back on us. So I guess the first question is, what does that mean? And have you dealt with any of that yet?
Sure. We deal with it daily.
Okay.
You know, in order to understand where we are now, we first have to go back for 30 seconds and look at the history of HIPAA. When HIPAA was first promulgated, well, I should say enforced, because it was created in the mid to late 90s, and then it was actually enforced in the next 10 years or after that. The original law said that it was the covered entity's responsibility to make sure that the personal health information, the PHI, was safeguarded and kept confidential. So what did that mean? Well, that meant doctors, right? Medical offices had to keep this stuff safe and make sure it was safe. If you ask your average physician what that means, they're going to look at you like you have three heads. They had no idea how to keep things confident. I mean, you know, they knew, we lock the door at night, right? We keep the filing cabinet locked. Isn't that keeping it safe, right? We just don't, you know, show our records to everybody. And clearly that wasn't enough, but that was the way the law was originally written. That in part motivated Congress to go and pass the HITECH Amendment to HIPAA. And what HITECH did was it said, okay, this isn't working, just focusing on doctors' offices and covered entities. Now it is both the business associate's responsibility and the doctor and the covered entity's responsibility individually, okay, to make sure that these things are kept confidential and that there are procedures in place and so forth. All right. And while many business associates, MSPs and so forth, took that to heart, most did not, or at least they would give half-hearted guarantees of compliance, and they certainly weren't in compliance. So, just as you have correctly pointed out, enough bad things have happened that they are trying to clarify these rules even more. And now you are seeing clarifications of prior rules. Notably, it doesn't really change the responsibility. Business associates, ever since HITECH came out, were responsible for keeping their stuff secure and making sure that they have safeguards and so on. Now the rule just lays it out. You know, it's almost as if you guys weren't listening. Let me say it in, you know, three words or less.
Right.
You are responsible, right? So that's what you're seeing. And business associates, MSPs, service providers, really need to take heed, because these incidents are becoming more and more noticeable, and they are going to be enforced with a greater degree of vigor and motivation. So they really need to pay attention to this stuff.
All right. So another item in that list that I found of high interest was number 9 on the list, where it says failure to enter into business associate agreements with subcontractors that create or receive PHI on their behalf. So I'm a business associate to my covered entity. Whether it's my employee or me, we're kind of covered. But if I send in another tech because the office is in another location, or we're all busy and I want to send somebody in there, this sounds to me like I need to force, I don't know if force is the right word, but I need to have subcontractors sign a business associate agreement.
100%.
Really?
You're 100% correct. That's right. It goes down the line. You can't have any missing link in that chain. If a covered entity has a BA in place with you, you should have a BA in place with anyone you send in. That is true. And you know, again, when you're signing these BA agreements, when your subcontractors are signing them, you should not think, no MSP out there who signs with a subcontractor should think that, oh, I have a BA in place. So if the subcontractor, doesn't do the right thing, or I sort of knew that the subcontractor wasn't going to be compliant, but hey, they signed the BA agreement, I'm out of it, right? You're not.
Oh,
you're not.
Okay.
You're not going to be able to delegate that obligation. You need to have a BA business associate agreement in place But that doesn't mean that you've now delegated the responsibility and the obligation of ensuring that you're dealing with the right people and that those people have done risk analyses and have undertaken risk management measures commensurate with the risks and the vulnerabilities of the information that they're getting. Everyone bears responsibility jointly and individually.
Okay, so as I just understood that, and I just had a big drop of sweat come down my side of my head here. So I know that there are companies that are asking me to do my own risk analysis for my stuff, even though I'm protecting their data. So this sounds right. Like now I have to tell my subcontractors, hey, here's a security assessment I need for you to fill out. Can you prove to me that you keep data safe? You keep your password safe? I mean, is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, ideally. Ideally, that's exactly what we're talking about. Now, you know, it's not to say that you have absolute liability and absolute responsibility for everything that your subcontractor does, unless your contract says that. But it is to say that you have to act reasonably, okay? And then the question is, well, what's reasonable? In this day and age, what is reasonable? Is it enough for me to call up Marvin, who I met once or twice, not you, Marvin, another Marvin, right? Some other guy, Marvin. I met him once or twice, maybe at an event, and I got his card, and I said, hey, Marvin, could you do this for me? Sure, I could do it for you. Is that reasonable? Well, in this day and age, probably not. It requires me to undertake a little bit more due diligence than that to ensure that Marvin, the fake Marvin, the hypothetical Marvin, is going to do the right thing. Because if push came to shove and you're sitting under oath in a court or a deposition, somebody said, well, how did you know this guy, Marvin? I met him twice. Oh, did you ever see his facility? No. Did you ever use his service? No. Did you know anyone that ever used his service before you called him? Well, no. But yet you trusted this guy to go in and handle your client's personal health information. Mm. Yeah. I mean, think of how dumb you're going to look. Well, you know, dumb in my world translates to liability. You have to act reasonably. And these days, the standard of reasonableness and the duty of care is getting higher and higher.
Okay. Well, sorry, I'm feverishly writing notes that we're going to have to make a couple of changes. Okay. So I read that right. So yeah, very interesting. So folks, I am going to put the link for that in the show note, and it literally is called Direct Liability of Business Associates. Now that's pertaining to HIPAA, but as I mentioned earlier, I have other areas where this stuff is starting to happen where, you know, the law firm that I'm working with has to do these security assessments for a bank. And it's a lot of the same stuff. So it's not, you know, HIPAA is its own little area, FINRA is its own little area, but these things are popping up now more and more where it sounds like everybody's going to start doing this at some point.
Most definitely. It's popping up not only in the health industry, right? That's an easy one.
Right.
And the financial industry, that's also fairly easy. That's a ground ball. But it is becoming increasingly popular, exponentially more popular than it ever was before, in the area of personal information. Just general personal information, having someone's name, address, account number, credit card number, social security number, any of this information that collectively could identify a person. That type of information is also coming under the same scrutiny that PHI is. You have to pay attention to it.
Okay, so this brings me back to, I had found originally when we talked, one of the things you did last year was you had a blog, and the blog basically said, I only do major agreements.
That's right.
So this sounds like now everything is pretty much coming to fruition of what you said. Everything is major now.
Right. Well, you know, the idea, the days of I'm a small provider, right? And I have some clients that I give services to. I don't really need anything fancy, right? I mean, give me like a one pager kind of thing. Those days are over. And while I'm not saying that your document has to be, quote, fancy, right? In fact, it shouldn't be fancy. It should just be plain English, readable by anybody. you know, the reality is that every client is a small client until you do something wrong. And suddenly the issue that occurs, that pops up, becomes a major issue. It's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And it's, you know, to you, it to the client, it's everything. So there are no small clients. There are no small issues. They should all be treated seriously. They all need master service agreements, statements of work defining, like we talked about in podcast, PodNuts 160, as you said, they all need these things in place, because we're all friends until we're not. Right. And when we're not, bad things happen.
Hmm. All right. You heard it here, folks. Well, you heard a lot of things here, but
yeah, that's true.
So I know that. So one of the questions I was going to ask, I think we already answered, but it sounds like we know that HIPAA and OCR is actually putting, you know, some teeth behind their enforcement. There's some pretty big fines that have come out, but I'm sure you deal with other areas where this is just as important and the same type of issues come up. So the question is, because I don't want people to think that, I just won't do HIPAA. You know, right. I don't have to worry about it. But there are situations where other stuff is going to be just as bad as HIPAA because, as you mentioned, personal information. So the question is, I'll just ask it this way. I'm sure you've dealt with some other situations where MSPs, IT companies feel that they have no responsibility because it's not HIPAA, it's not FINRA. But it sounds like we need to worry about the fact that we are going to have liability regardless of whether it's, you know, one of those acronyms.
No doubt. Listen, and this really pops up in the area of you know, the hottest topic out there now, which is security, right? Security mm-hmm. as a service, firewalls and SIM and penetration testing and so forth. You know, service providers are looking for the next great thing. And that seems to be the area of security. And what, you know, if they, any provider out there that thinks, well, I'm just not doing this for a medical office, so, you know, HIPAA doesn't apply, I'm fine. The information, the personal information to which you have access, right, that you might be helping manipulate or aggregate, the treatment of that information is really something that you need to focus on. We're seeing a tremendous amount of liability from negligence, from the negligence of MSPs that just simply fail to understand that when they're dealing with a client's data, there's no conceivable scenario under which the client is not going to reasonably expect that you're going to take some precautions to keep that stuff confidential, to keep it protected. Okay. And even if it doesn't fall under a statute like HIPAA, okay, it doesn't fall under a statute like Sarbanes-Oxley, there is a duty of care that exists out there. Is it written? Well, a lot of states are trying to write it now, right, individually, but there's no single place where you could see it written, except for maybe in Europe, where you have the GDPR. In the U.S., there's no real single place where you'll see it. But I got to tell you, if you mess it up or you do something wrong, you're going to be sued. You're going to be sued for negligence. You're going to be sued for an unfair and deceptive trade practice. You're going to be sued for a lot of different things. And they're not going to point to a federal statute. They're not going to point to a state statute. They're simply going to point to the fact that in this day and age, every MSP is in the security business, every single one of them. Okay. And as long as you're in that business, you need to undertake reasonable safeguards, which goes back to our original question. What's reasonable? In this day and age, reasonable is using responsible third parties, entering into confidentiality agreements, making sure that you undertake risk analyses, risk management procedures, having written incident response plans in place. All of these things are reasonable. You drop below that, you're acting unreasonable. You're acting unreasonably, and you're going to have liability, maybe company-ending liability.
So I actually had just written down MSSP because I was going to ask you. I know that I'd say in the last year to 18 months, I've seen a lot of tech companies try to rebrand themselves from MSP to MSSP. And I was going to ask you, had you seen a lot of that?
Oh, it's happening all over.
But it sounds like it doesn't really matter whether you're an MSP or an MSSP, because we're all going to be responsible.
Arose by any other name, right? I don't care what you call yourself. You could call yourself, the janitorial services. If you're dealing with your client's data, you're accessing it, you're helping secure it, you are analyzing it, you're aggregating it. If you're touching it in any way, shape, or form, you're in the security business. And you have to treat your customers accordingly, and you have to make sure that your agreements comport with that reality. Wow. Most definitely.
Okay. I think I'm sorry I asked some of these questions, because now I got to change.
Now you're scared.
I got to pay you some money for some new stuff. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's do this. I'm out of breath.
That kind of effect on you. My God. Well, if you're listening to this podcast in the car, pull over. Okay, just pull over.
So I know I gave you a couple of stories of, from my perspective of the agreements and the statements of work and, asking my questions about, the responsibility of business associates. So I had a whole thing on here of asking you, hey, are there any interesting, new stories that you're willing to share with us? And I'm almost afraid to ask, but I'm going to.
You want to leverage the sadness of my clients, isn't that nice? Well, yes. I'll tell you. So you ask a lawyer, do you have any good stories? Well, we have plenty of good stories. Yes. I'll change some of the names to protect the innocent. I'll tell you, where we see a lot of interesting things happening, as I mentioned, is in the area of security. And it's in the area of service providers not thinking through all of the various known knowns and known unknowns that can occur. And one that happened recently, and I actually talk about this in my own podcast, is I have a client that is a white hat hacker. So that company is in the business of breaking into other people's companies, right? They're paid to do that penetration testing to test the systems of their clients. And so they were paid to hack into a bank, a fairly large bank. It had 17, 18 branches, fairly large local bank. And what they did was they said, okay, we're going to try to hack into this bank. And what ended up happening was when they engaged in the penetration testing, they used some orthodox, but some unorthodox ways of doing it, right? Because that's what you want to do. You want to test it by not just saying, okay, I'm going to punch you in the face. You don't telegraph that, right? You either punch them and you don't give it up or it's not worth anything. So they broke into the bank. The bank's defenses did exactly what it should have done. It shut down the attack, but it did so by shutting down every branch.
Oh.
Every computer, every server, everything in all of the branches of the bank. And the protocol was that it could not be brought up for 24 hours in the middle of the week. So that wasn't a good thing, at least not from the bank's perspective.
So they were supposed to break in.
Yes. Or they were supposed to try.
Or supposed to try to break in. But were they supposed to take down all 17 branches, or were they supposed to kind of give them a window of when to do it? Or,
it's not where you aim, it's where you hit. They were not aiming to take down all 17 branches, but they did unintentionally. And so the next few hours were comprised of lots of calls from bank executives threatening everything. I can't believe you took down all of our bank. What kind of test is this? What did you do? And so on. But here's the thing, okay? My clients had a great contract in place. And what it basically said was, look, when it comes to penetration testing, okay, there is no normal. There is no baseline. There's nothing that you can do to say, well, this is what we would expect you to do when you're breaking into a bank, because then it would be a worthless service. And so what we had the bank do in advance in their contract was acknowledge there is no baseline. That willful, intentional stuff that would normally cause a problem in the area of penetration testing and security services, that's going to be waived. And the bank waived all that. And once the bank's lawyers got a hold of that and they said, wow, we actually waived our right to pursue them, the call stopped and there was no liability and everything was fine. The moral of the story, okay, is that when you're offering things like security services in this area, you have to think it through, right? If you're going to be breaking in or testing someone's defenses, what might happen? Well, the server might go down. All the servers might go down. What else might happen? It might trigger a call to law enforcement, right? The cops could show up. The FBI could show up. These are the things that could happen under normal circumstances. And then you have all the unknown things that could happen. So when you're in an engagement for a security service like SIM or firewall or pen testing and so on, you really need to think about the parade of horribles that could happen and make sure that expectations are set. And where are they set? They're set, as we said earlier, in the statement of work, right? They're set in the statement of work. This is what could happen, letting you know, boom, boom, boom. And you're going to limit liability, right, through the MSA, that service agreement that's the umbrella over everything you do. So when you combine a solid MSA with a statement of work that is properly worded for the security service that you are providing, you're in good shape. My clients were in good shape. And, you know, that's a story that was interesting, but it wasn't a tragedy because they had the right documents in place.
Well, I mean, it's kind of a tragedy. They shut down a bank for 24 hours. But, you know, being able to show ahead of time, look, this is not a test. This is not a simulation. This is real.
Right. And, you know, if the bank, on the flip side, if the bank, you know, was worried or really read the agreement before they had signed it, maybe they would have thought of the parade of horribles that we are specifically naming and excluding, right? Saying exclusion from liability and required the client to do it on a weekend, right? They could have done things like that. So, you know, while we can't control how our clients handle things and whether they read the contracts that we're putting in front of them, what we can control is our end of things, right? What we can offer them, our contracts, our agreements, make sure they're signed, follow them, don't exceed them, because then you're going to get into the scope creep area. And if you do that, then you could focus on what you really do for a living, right? Which is data management, professional information, technology consulting, and so forth. You don't have to worry about that legal stuff.
Right. And it's nice when you can say to them, look, the system did what it was supposed to do. It stopped an attack. So, you know, we were doing it as a, you know, test, but had this been a real hack attack, it would have stopped. So.
Right. Yeah. And that was what we tried to convince them of in their, of course, you know, in their emotional state. They didn't really see it that way. Maybe they do in retrospect. I don't know. They won't talk to us now, but it's fine. They paid the bill. they paid my clients. So it's all good.
That's what it all comes down to. They pay the bills and don't sue you.
Paid the bill and they stayed out of court.
That's right.
And that's what life's about.
All right. Well,
getting
Brad,
paid and staying out of court.
Yes. I live that every day. Brad, I want to thank you for coming on and not only sharing that story, but answering a couple of my questions. And I don't know if you meant to stir up more work from me or not, but you did.
I did. Yeah. Well, that was my secret. That was my secret plan all along.
Yeah. And I hope that it prompts maybe some more calls from listeners of the show that realize, hey, I got to do something. And we'll see how that goes. All right.
Right. Got it. And the original, the offer that we offered to your listeners back in podcast 160 is being repeated again here, which is if they call the office and they contact us and they mention that they listen to us on this podcast, they have to specifically mention the podcast, we would be happy to review their documents, their current MSA, their current SOW, whatever documents they're currently using that are customer facing. We'd be happy to give them a free confidential consult about the good, bad, and ugly of those documents. And normally they would have to pay consult fees and hundreds of dollars for that. But again, if they mention the podcast, we will waive that.
Fantastic. And I do know some people that took advantage of that last year. And so hopefully some people will do that again this year. I will put that in the show note along with your contact information. And I think last time we put your email address and phone number. Is that what we're going to do again?
Yeah, email and phone number is fine, as well as our new podcast that we just launched about 2 months ago, the Technology Bradcast instead of the podcast.
Yes, the Brad.
Wasn't that clever? I'm so clever. TechnologyBradcast.com, and they could hear more about this type of these types of issues.
Yep, and folks, I will put the link to that in the show note as well. It's got a couple of great episodes in there. Well, they're all great, I'm going to say, right? But there's
just a couple.
But just to give you an idea, one of the titles from, let's see here, from May, every MSP needs an incident response plan. Where's yours? Your SOW needs to tell a story or else it sucks. that's a nice title.
Hard stop right there.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And of course, the last one you just posted last week. No, this was on Sunday. It looks like
a few days ago.
You had one a few minutes ago. I didn't see that one.
A
few days ago. Yeah. The Holy Trinity of Security as a Service, penetration testing. So,
right. We focus on pen testing, and then we're going to focus next on SIM solutions followed by firewall.
Beautiful. Oh, I guess I'll have to listen to the firewall conversation because I got a couple of upgrades coming we'll need to do with that. All right. So, yep. So I'll have all of that in the show note, folks. Again, Bradley Gross, founder and president of the law offices of Bradley Gross, PA, is a fixture down here in South Florida, has been on the circuit with ASCII and some other companies out there spreading the good news of service agreements. And again, like I said, not just agreements, but anything internet technology related, they are a complete business technology law firm. So thank you very much, Bradley. I'm going to mute you now so I can end the show here. All right.
All right. Thanks, Marvin. It was a pleasure being here.
All right. So ladies and gentlemen, I am going to not edit this out, but it's going to sound awkward as I find the mute button for them and then get to my notes. Again, you've just listened to Bradley Gross. Yeah, that was poor. I want to say again, thank you to the sponsor of today's show, Freedom Voice, the voice of small business. Be sure to head over to freedomvoice.com/partners, and you'll be able to see what they've done for 20 years. They have been helping partners succeed, and when they say partner, they stand by it. I can attest to that. There will also be more contact information for Bradley, his email, phone number, LinkedIn and Facebook page, and the link to his podcast, Bradcast. And you'll have some great information over there. The link to Tekton Unplugged and the link to help Eric R. Dini and family. I want to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. And I hope to have another great show for you next week. So to now, I'm going to sign off. And until next time, holla.